is CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor. Here's John Batchelor.
I welcome Anatole Levin of the Quincy Institute for Responsible Statecraft. Eurasia, two wars simultaneously, no positive news from the battlefields. In Ukraine, where the Ukrainians still look for support from the U.S., and in Gaza, where there is still no final assault on Rafah and the remains of the Hamas. However, there is no reason to believe that the Israelis will wait indefinitely. Also, we have suggestion that Hezbollah is going to be next on the must-do list in the Middle East because of the continued barrage of rockets driving the 80 to 100,000 Israelis from the border region. That is unacceptable, I understand. However, Anatole's here to talk of lessons learned so far about the Ukraine war and looking for anything that looks like peace talks or armistice talks or arrangements. Anatole, a very good evening to you. Most recently in The Guardian, you published an analysis, and in it, it came down to this, two lessons so far of the Ukraine war. Russia isn't an imminent threat. I'm reading the headline from The Guardian. Europe must rearm regardless. We had news this morning about rearmament in Europe, across the landscape in Europe, but the one about an imminent threat is important to understand because Vladimir Putin, in remarks in what you'd have to say, a pre-presidential vote pitch to the Russian people, talked again of nuclear weapons if NATO puts troops into Ukraine. And then he also talked of what you could say are preconditions for treaty talks or armistice talks or peace talks. One of them was a demilitarized Ukraine, which might be unacceptable, but you start somewhere. What did you hear in Putin's interview? Good evening to you.
Hello, John. Well, first of all, yes, I mean, he was obviously trying to deter NATO or NATO countries from sending troops, fighting troops into Ukraine after President Macron's statement that that was possible. He obviously wanted to push back against that. So that was the intention of his stressing Russia's nuclear power to make clear the huge risks if NATO were to do that. I mean, sadly, yes, he talked about the possibility of peace talks. He emphasized that Russia is open to talks. But what he said pretty strongly was that Russia is not interested in a ceasefire at present, because that would just give, he thinks that any moves for a ceasefire in the West are just because Ukraine is running out of ammunition, and it's just to give the West time to rearm Ukraine. And so Russia is not interested in a temporary ceasefire. Russia is interested in an actual full-scale peace settlement. And yes, he talked about the disarmament of Ukraine, though he didn't go into any detail about what that would mean in practice. And of course, as usual, Ukrainian neutrality. I mean, a bar on Ukraine joining NATO. So I think that if we did move towards talks try to get, if we made a proposal for talks, we would have to basically assure the Russians that we are, in fact, prepared to talk about those two issues, and in principle to concede them in return for Russia basically stopping further attacks on Ukraine.
The conditions also included what you'd have to say is assumptions that Novorossiya is not an issue for him. It's not to be negotiated. Did you hear it that way? We're not talking about Kharkiv to Odessa. We're talking about the rest of Ukraine must be demilitarized. How did you hear him?
Yes, I mean, I think the, I mean, my sense is that the basic Russian position is that if they could get a deal now, which answered their wider needs or demands for security, which means a treaty of neutrality and some form of disarmament. What they mean by denazification has never been entirely clear, but if they could get what they wanted on other issues, they would basically abandon their hopes of conquering more Ukrainian territory. That would be the essential, the basic terms of the deal. And as far as the territory they've already conquered is concerned, well, sometimes they have demanded recognition of their annexations by the West and Ukraine. That is, of course, completely out of the question. The Ukrainians can't do it. We shouldn't do it. We can't force them to do it. But early in the war, President Zelensky suggested that, as you know, we have done in Cyprus and Kashmir and elsewhere, that this issue should be deferred for future negotiations. And, you know, in the case of Cyprus, these negotiations, you know, the question of the status of Turkish-occupied northern Cyprus and the reunification of the island, these negotiations have now gone on for 50 years. So, you know, but on the other hand, war hasn't resumed. So we would have to test whether that kind of way out would be acceptable to Russia. My sense is that it probably would. I cannot, of course, say definitely. One reason is that although the Russians, you know, are now doing much better on the battlefield, and you know, Ukraine is in terrible difficulties, not just because of weaponry and munitions, but even more importantly because they're running out of men. And I think it is now quite possible that if we do not reach a settlement, Russia can conquer considerably larger bits of eastern Ukraine. But when it comes to, I mean, the thing is, conquering the countryside in itself is not of great importance. To turn this into a, you know, a great Russian victory, they would have to capture big cities like Zaporizhia and Kharkov. Now, as we've seen, I mean, that is a tremendous challenge. If you look at the siege of Mariupol, they lost thousands of casualties. And of course, in the process, the city was completely destroyed. So they would inherit a heap of ruins. And Kharkov is almost 10 times the size of Mariupol. They'd inherit a heap of ruins, inhabited, of course, by bitterly infuriated survivors. So, you know, everything is not going in Russia's way militarily. A lot is, but not everything.
I want to come back to the negotiations and how they work. Generally speaking, you feel your way forward by having two recognized authorities comment about this is what we must have. We're poking around as to how Putin is presenting his case. At the same time, we know President Zelensky has a 10-point plan, most of which is extreme positions. You must leave all of Ukraine and Crimea. That is, at the start, unacceptable. But it's a plan. It's a beginning conversation. Looking at how other stalemates have been resolved, I'm thinking of 1916, for example, right after Woodrow Wilson was reelected with a narrow margin. Immediately, there were rumors that Wilson would arbitrate a peace conference between Berlin, London, and Paris. That came to nothing and led to another extremely violent year and a half of war, almost 2 years of war. That's the risk here, but you need to begin the conversation somewhere. Is it underway to your measure? Is that what Putin and Zelensky are doing? They're giving permission to many forums, and I'm thinking you can have peace talks in Istanbul, you could have peace talks at Vatican, you could have meetings anywhere in the diplomatic canvas. We have, for an example, the revelation in the Financial Times this morning that the U.S. is speaking in Oman to Iran about containing the Houthis' harassment of Red Sea shipping. Now, that's like pinball, but it describes a fact that we have this morning. That could very well be a model for what we're seeing in Ukraine. Is it too early to look for that, Anatole?
I fear so as far as Russia and Ukraine are concerned, because the Ukraine peace plan is not a peace plan. It sets out total Ukrainian victory, which is not going to happen. I'm afraid that talks would have to begin, and they'd have to begin in secret, between the United States and Russia, because apart from anything else, Moscow is convinced that only America has the authority and power to make a peace deal and to make it stick. But also, when it comes to two of the critical issues, which are named by Putin, I mean, one is Ukraine not getting into NATO, and secondly is the arming of Ukraine. That isn't; those aren't actually questions for the Ukrainians. They're questions for the West, and above all, the United States, because it's up to us whether Ukraine is actually offered membership of NATO. Ukraine can ask, but we can say no. Incidentally, I mean, there is no chance whatsoever now that Ukraine will actually get into NATO. We're not sacrificing anything by conceding that, because we've said again and again that we won't fight to defend Ukraine. So, in other words, an Article 5 guarantee would be meaningless. And secondly, it only takes one NATO country to veto a membership accession, and it's quite clear that Hungary would do that. But only the US can really guarantee this. And of course, only the US can guarantee not to give Ukraine certain categories of long-range weapons. Well, I mean, the Europeans as well. So no, I mean, I think these talks would have to begin between Russia and America, and they would have to begin with America saying that it is prepared in principle to agree on these two issues, if, of course, Russia concedes in other areas. But initially, these talks would have to take place in secret. This kind of exploratory talk, cannot take place in the full blaze of publicity.
The fact that the U.S. is talking to Iran, that could be a window on Moscow. Do you agree?
It could indeed, if they're willing to do it. But I have to say that at present, I have not heard anything to suggest that the Biden administration is in fact preparing to do that. I mean, it could. There's been a back channel between the CIA director, William Burns, and his counterparts in Moscow over the nuclear threat. But that's as far as it goes. Right. That hasn't turned into, as far as I know, actual preparatory talks for a peace settlement. The Biden administration is basically waiting until, or trying to wait until after the next U.S. elections. But it may be that Ukraine does not have that much time.
Anatole Levin of the Quincy Institute for Responsible Statecraft. We've been spending a great deal of time in the battlespace of Ukraine. All Europe is now moving because of NATO's demands. When we come back, what does that mean? Because remember, the two lessons here, Europe must rearm, is the second lesson. The first is Russia is not an imminent threat. This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor.